I love Christmas pageants. Christmas pageants are important, especially for a congregation that has so many children, because children learn from playing a role, and children learn from seeing other children play a role. We had our pageant last week on Sunday, and it was terrific. And there was a joyful abundance, and it was just the right kind of holy chaos. I've never been to a perfect pageant, and I don't think I ever want to see one, because the first Christmas was far from perfect. Mary and Joseph were forced to travel to Bethlehem to be counted like a number. The historical details are a bit off because Luke didn't have Wikipedia and the internet, but the main point is true, which is that Caesar manipulated the population so he could maximize his wealth and the wealth of his empire. And the people suffered. It was an oppression of the worst kind. It was not the Pax Romana. Oh, it was Romano, but there was no Pax. You know, middle-class children in Christmas pageants really don't get taxation and oppression. But they do understand how hard it is to sleep away from home and to be away from home when you're about to give birth. Some of you are away from your home tonight, and you're bunking in with family or friends. And in that way, you are like Mary and Joseph and Jesus. And so you just might have some empathy for the Holy Family. Now, there are those that say that St. Francis was responsible for the very first Christmas pageant. That is very, very likely not true. But it does appear to be true that he planned the first live nativity scene in history, at least in recorded history. It was the year 1223 in a cave in Greccio, Italy. According to Catholic tradition, some miracles were attributed to this experience, hence he got the title Saint. Now, Francis grew up in luxury. His father was an extremely wealthy merchant, but Francis had to go to war to defend, the business, and he was injured in battle, and it took a long time for him to recover. And he did a lot of meditating and thinking and praying, and he decided to serve the sick and the poor and work for a peaceful world after that experience. Okay, so let me ask you, how many of you have ever been in a Christmas pageant? Raise your hand. Hi, let me see. Like, that's more than half the room. Okay, how many of you have ever seen a Christmas pageant? That's just about the whole room, isn't it? I like Christmas pageants, and I like nativity sets too. They are important because children learn from play, and playing the roles of Mary and Jesus and Joseph and the shepherd and the angels and the magi and even the animals is important. Children get to express themselves. So if you have a beautiful heirloom creche in your family, and you shout at your kids, "Don't touch that thing," you need to go out and buy another one so the kids can play. We have three nativity sets up here. Gives you an idea what kind of variety is available out there in the world, or you can be like Kelly and make your own for your grandchildren. Although there don't seem to be any specifically Christmas pageants preserved in historical documents from the Middle Ages, we do know that Christmas was first widely celebrated, by the church in the 4th century, mid-300s. And we do know that there were hundreds of years of religious plays offered between the 4th century and between St. Francis. Here is a 4th century relief that shows an ox and a donkey bending over, nearly touching the baby Jesus. The ox and the donkey are mentioned with the word manger in the book of Isaiah. That's where that tradition comes from. And here is another relief, also from the 4th century, showing the adoration of the Magi for Jesus. And if you look closely, you can see the star over Mary's head, and you can see the three camels that brought the Magi. We don't know if there were Christmas pageants, but we know that nativity scenes were already a big thing by the year 400. So in some ways, when we come together as a congregation, as family and friends, on Christmas Eve, it's like encountering a nativity set or a creche. When we hear the familiar readings, the carols, the lyrics, the music, we remember Christmas's past. That's why I asked you to raise your hand, as well as the first Christmas. We can use our theological imaginations or our spiritual imaginations, as Jen calls them. We can put ourselves in the place of the people in Scripture, and this can help us draw out meaning for our own lives. So what would it be like for an angel to come visit you? What would it be like to be like Zechariah and Mary, to come face to face with an angel? What would it be like to be greeted by a host of angels out while we're tending the sheep? I think this artist has got it down just right. His name is Nick Mahir. An army that turns into a choir. Sometimes God or the universe seems to sneak up on us and hand us a task that we did not ask for, a task that seems beyond our abilities, and we're quaking in our sandals. These guys turn blue with terror when the angels appear. Sometimes we take on a BHAG. That comes from the Harvard School of Business. A big, hairy, audacious goal. BHAG. B-E-H-A-G. Get it? You know? Or we get assigned one. And we ask ourselves, how did I get in this mess? And I guess angels have this effect upon us as well. Because they say to Zechariah, and they say to Mary, and they say to Joseph, and they say to the shepherds, don't be afraid. Because God is going to walk with you and help you get through this. And this is perhaps one of the central messages of Christmas. God is going to walk with you and help you get through this. God did not come to humanity in a set of abstract philosophical principles. God decided to enter the world as a human child, an infant lowly, who at the beginning was totally dependent upon his parents for everything in his life, dependent on his cousins, on his aunties, and his uncles for every need. Sometimes teachers at the big schools call this the scandal of particularity. God became human. God squished God's self into a tiny little baby. That must have been some kind of trick. God came into the world to walk with all humanity and to assure you that you are loved. God is going to help us get through this thing. God is going to help us with our BHAGs. God came into the world to remind us, to remind humanity, that we're not alone. So in Celtic spirituality, our Irish and our Scottish and our Welsh friends have this phrase, this description, called a thin place. They speak of thin places on the earth where the divide, the wall, the line between heaven and earth, the veil between God and humanity is almost transparent. There are certain places and spaces on our globe that seem to be soaked in prayer and bathed by the sacred. It's as if angel light is all around. Sometimes you find this in architecture. Sometimes it's in the natural beauty of a landscape. Sometimes we feel it in art and music. I'm feeling it a lot tonight in the music. Sometimes it's in relationships. And sometimes it's in plants and animals. Sometimes it even happens in prayer and worship. Thin places. In the birth of Jesus, God completely tears down the veil, the dividing wall, the separation, and God becomes one with humanity, one with the world. We people, we churches, quite often fail to live into this reality. We discount the holy. We leave money on the table, so to speak. We decline to avail ourselves of the abundance that God provides. Stuff gets in the way, hurts and pains, experiences. But there's no penalty from God. There's no punishment. It's just joy passed over and abundance avoided. So in our Christmas pageant this year, the kids cracked me up, or the dialogue cracked me up. I don't know if you were responsible for this or it came in the book. Yeah, you might have shaped it up. Okay. Joseph and Mary go knocking on doors in Bethlehem, looking for a place to stay. I just love the line. I'm sorry, there are 20 children, grandmas, grandpas, aunts and uncles, cousins, nieces, and nephews here. We should ask our neighbors. They always help people in need. I'll come and introduce you. And then that was repeated again, but this time it was 30 aunts and uncles and cousins and grandmas and grandpas. And then it was repeated again, and it was 40 grandmas, aunts, uncles, cousins, and nieces and nephews. And the best part is, or was, there was no slamming of the door and no grumpy innkeeper. You know why? Because it's not in the Bible. There's no mention of an innkeeper in the Bible. It's old King James that said it was an inn. We've been holding on to that fallacy for 400 years, and finally this year, in the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible, updated edition, there is an especially important verse, and it goes like this. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the guest room. And that changes everything. She gave birth, and there was no place in the guest room. And finally, the scholars got it right. Scholars have been asking questions for nearly 100 years about this Greek word katalubati, which they said was the inn, but it's not. It's the guest room. And it changes everything for us, and it delivers a new Christian Christmas. Abundance. People have been saying for years that those people in Bethlehem are grumpy. They slam doors. They wouldn't let Joseph and Mary in the door. But in fact, all those people in Bethlehem were relatives of Joseph. This was where his family came from. And the people of Palestine would have bent over backwards to accommodate a relative, especially one with a pregnant wife. And so here is an alternative, a highly likely reality, that even though it was crowded because of the census or because of some holy day, Mary and Joseph planned ahead. They knew when babies come back then, and arrived early, and were not alone, but were surrounded by extended family who made room for them in the part of the house that was normally set aside for the animals. Yes, the animals were in the house. That was the only place left to sleep. Theologian Kelly Nicandeja, we've been reading about her this month, points out that private space was not a rubric in that culture. Family was the rubric, And Jesus was born among family. The relatives lovingly tended to Mary. And the midwives in the village guided the delivery. There was an abundance of hospitality. There was an abundance of love. And there was an abundance of loving support. There is nothing in the Gospel of Luke that refutes this loving hypothesis and everything in Palestinian history and culture that supports it. And doesn't that change the story? Now the story becomes Jesus was loved and cared for by family from the very beginning. And this Jesus who was loved and cared for by family grows to become keenly aware of the divinity within him, and he changes the world. Now Christmas becomes not just don't slam doors, but bend over backwards, extending whatever hospitality you can to people in need wherever and whenever you can. Because you might be launching an eternally important person into the universe. In fact, you are always launching eternally important people into the universe. That is what God calls us to do. To share our love and to share our abundance. Another way of putting it might be to say, it's nice to give presents at Christmas, and we're all going to do it tonight and tomorrow. But the greater gift is to offer your presence spelled with a C-E at the end. In our time, in this tech crazy world, that might mean putting this instrument of torture face down and on silent. Giving up some TV, turning away from the computer to be present to those gathered around us for this very special day. So now, using my theological imagination, my spiritual creativity, and the latest science we have on the microbiome in the human body, that keeps our bodies healthy. We all know what probiotics are now, don't we? Eat yogurt, right? I'd like to close with this hypothesis. We are at the home at which Mary and Joseph stayed. The shepherds have already come with their stories of angels, and now they are gone. And little bits of angel dust are all scattered all over the place, even getting into the fur of the animals. And Jesus begins to cry. And of course, everybody wants to soothe the baby. He's already been fed. And so he has passed from one relative to another. And then he begins to coo. And he's passed around some more. Can you imagine holding this child? Your cousin, looking at his face, maybe even getting his eyes open once or twice, a little bit. And with every breath, he inhales some of the microbiome of the family, and he exhales some God dust, some fully human, fully divine microbiome, so that every member of the extended family is inoculated with love. And every time they breathe out, they share that biome with the world, and soon we all have it. Love flowing into us and love flowing out of us. The God-given capacity to share God's love. That's the gift of Christ to you. Merry Christmas.